We were just talking, schmoozing a little bit about times of learning in Yeshiva and Eretz Yisrael, and people get like very into a certain way of thinking, and there's a certain intensity to be learning full time that a person has, particularly in the environment of the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. And certainly, I'm sure many of us could recall, you know, what that feels like, you know, after coming out of time in the holy atmosphere of this emotional and intellectual immersion in the center of our religious lives, being in yeshiva. So you can imagine what that's like after 14 years, right? Like, you know, after Shana Bet, it's pretty good. Imagine after Shana Yudalid, right? Shana Yudalid, and no Ben Azman, you don't go home at all. So, like, what do you feel like? What does Yaakov Avinu feel like at a moment like that? It's got to be pretty impressive. I'm sure many of us, you know, have had in those times of total immersion in yeshiva, although I guess it doesn't exist anymore with cell phones, but like in my time there used to be such a thing. It's like you're totally immersed in the yeshiva, where like you go to sleep at night and you're dreaming about the sugyas that you learned that day, or you have actual Torah dreams. You know, that like it resonates, it makes sense. Something like that could happen. After Shana Yud Dalid, with no Ben Azmanim and never going home and not calling your parents even on the phone, like I can't even imagine the intensity of that kind of experience. You know, we lament nowadays, people my age lament about how you guys never have that experience because of cell phones. And what we used to hear from like old European Rebbeim is, you don't know what it is because you come home Ben Azmanim, like you're home for Pesach. Like you don't even understand like what it was for someone like Rav Gifter to go from Connecticut, you know, to you know, what? To Mir, right? Did he go to Mir? I think, or wherever he went, you know, to Poland or whatever, for years at a time, you know, missing all the family weddings. And so, you know, nowadays if it's your second cousin's bat mitzvah, you know, like you can't possibly miss it. You got to be home for 3 weeks, you know, because you have to take pictures before, and then okay, so so that's why you got to be home for 3 weeks. So the intensity of that kind of experience is very hard to imagine. And Yaakov, in fact, goes to sleep after 14 years and he sees a sulam. He sees a ladder. And the Baal HaTurim writes that this was no ordinary ladder. The gematria of sulam, without the vav, is the same as Sinai. Meaning, he saw Maimon Har Sinai in his dream. It was Mamash Kabbalah HaTorah. That he experiences. Baal HaTurim writes, Baal HaTurim is a fairly reliable source. So Yaakov saw Maimon Har Sinai in his dream, and he wakes up and he declares, "Ein ze ki im beis Elokim v'ze shar ha-shamayim." He knew that he was clearly experiencing something very holy in a very holy place, and then he begins to pray. Right? Then he begins to be mevakish. He's mevakish Hashem for things. He asks for things. So there's something powerful about a prayer in a moment of holiness. We've all experienced Ne'ilah Yom Kippur after a very powerful and meaningful Yom Kippur. It's a different kind of tefillah. Right? You're not davening for narishkeit. You're not davening for mundane things. You're not davening for silly things. Like those tefillos that, I don't know, that the Jets should win the Super Bowl, those don't even enter your mind at that time. The tefillos that, I don't know, that the teenager has, that that girl should like him, you know? Like, those don't enter your mind at a time like that. These are powerful tefillos. So what does Yaakov daven for at a time like that? You know, think back. What did you daven for after Yom Kippur or after 2 years of yeshiva? So you would imagine to establish a Torah family, always be strong enough to remain dedicated to the ideals of your youth, to know, you know, to know what's important in life. So what does Yaakov daven for? Nasan li lechem le'echol uveged l'lbosh. Food and clothing. It would be really great to have a good steak, and it would be really, really great to have nice clothing, you know? Like, in Israel it's hard to find the place that, you know, sells the kind of clothing you're interested in, you know? That's what he's davening for. Lechem le'echol uveged l'lbosh. Now those are important, obviously. You need to live. You need to live. You can't live without lechem. But like, that's going to be the focal point of your tefillos at that point. Yeah, Chazal are so bothered by this. Chazal say it can't be. It can't be that that's what it's done. Lechem ze lechem apanim. Beger el bigdei kuhuna. Okay, but the pashuk shah. He wasn't asking for lechem apanim and bigdei kuhuna. He was asking for lechem and beger for himself. How do we understand that? Furthermore, guys in the shidduch world, guys sometimes get a bad rap. You should just be prepared for this. People will say that you guys are too picky. They're going to say that you're not really interested in getting married, because if you were, then you would say yes to the girl that your mother's cousin's best friend thought of for you, because you wear pants and she wears a skirt, and so it's perfect for you. Or you're skinny and she's skinny, you're tall and she's tall, and therefore you're perfect for each other, you're going to get you hear that a lot. And obviously people are complicated, they have different things that go on in their lives that cause them to make different decisions. Like if a guy decides, I just came off of an emotional relationship, I need to take a little break now, right? So there will be people who will whisper, oh, he doesn't really want to get married, what kind of break, what business is this with the, there will be people who say stuff like that, it's unfair to a degree. Obviously sometimes there is room for criticism and we don't always make the right decisions, but there, sometimes it's very unfair. But at a certain point, you can sometimes look at a person and say, how motivated is this guy to really, find the woman that he wants to spend the rest of his life with? Let's say you're well into middle age and you take 14 years off of a break from dating, right? So maybe at that point it's is this guy really serious about getting married? Why did he go away for 14 years if he was so serious? And he's in middle age already. Why would he do that? And Yaakov Avinu, well into middle age, not married, his parents throw him out of the house and tell him, go find yourself a wife. It's slow, I will. Just give me 14 years first. Is that really the best time to sit and learn? He didn't have enough time in Yeshiva Savram Yitzchak that he felt he needed some more time in Yeshiva Shem Ve'eber, where the Rosh Yeshiva, couldn't possibly match those who had previously taught him. And a third issue. One thing that every new rabbi knows going into a new community, I spent a couple of weeks ago, I spent Shabbos in Montreal, where my friend Rabbi Yecheskel Freundlich is the Rav there now. I think this is his third year there, so he's still relatively new. And he was explaining to me, the different issues. Every community has its own challenges. And he said, the main thing is, don't make waves at the beginning. So, whatever changes he made were so minor, just an extra 5 minutes of learning here, a little more Torah in that context, and those little things make a big difference. But you don't make big changes, and you don't start going in and saying, "Oh, you're doing this all wrong," and we're gonna, because no one's gonna like you. It's not gonna be effective. It's just not gonna work if you do things that way. You don't walk into a new place and start bossing people around and asking them to change the way they do business. It's just not the way things are supposed to go. People will resent you for it. Change has to come in a gradual way. Yaakov walks into Haran for the first time. What does he do? His very first act as a visitor of Haran is to give a Musar Shmuz to the shepherds. Hein Oda Yom Gadol. Lo Yaseh Mikneh. It's not time for you to gather the flock now. Right? And Rashi explains, "Mschira yom atem lo shlamtem pulas hayom." Hey, if you're schira yom, hello, guys, you're being paid on the clock over here. What's going on over here? You're being paid for this time. What are you taking a lunch break for? Imagine, I take a walk during lunch sometimes, and I'll walk down by Union Turnpike, and the construction worker will be sitting on the side and eating a sandwich or something. I'll be like, "Hey, buddy, is this, are you entitled to this lunch break?" I don't think I want to have the conversation that follows after I ask that question. That's not okay to just start raising such a conversation. And besides that, he's so shocked that the shepherds are not 100% honest in the way that they conduct their business. We know this, Gemara Bava Metzia. Who's a ganav? A shepherd. A shepherd is a ganav, right? That's what they do. They allow their roi tzon are psulim la'edus. They're considered to be naturally pasul la'edus. That's a Gemara that we saw in Bava Metzia. It's not a profession that's noted for its honest people. So what exactly was Yaakov thinking in going through with this criticism? So in order to answer these questions, it's important to understand a very simple distinction. The schools have been working very hard in recent years to figure out the next generation of Holocaust education. Because the previous generation of Holocaust education was fairly simple, it was fairly straightforward. What was it?
Bring
in survivors. And that's it. Survivors who could speak English with a European accent, who are not like public speakers. They're not people who are, you know, inspiring in that sense. And you know what they had to do? All they had to do is roll up their sleeve, right? Show you the numbers, describe their experiences in their broken English, and it had more of an impact than all the education you can get in the entire world. I was at an honor society induction ceremony for my son the other night in DRS, and they tell every kid to pick, you know, a hero of yours, a Jewish hero of yours. And I couldn't believe how many kids picked a great grandparent. And for most of them, it was a great grandparent who had since been deceased, that they never met, that they don't know. So, you know, people now, they have experts and professors and historians, and they speak about the Holocaust, and the kids can't really relate to it at all. But when you bring in somebody who lived through it, even if they're not historians, and they roll up their sleeves, they show the numbers, and that's it. And the kids are moved, and they know that they're talking to a real person who went through this kind of experience. You know, I remember years ago, a Talmud of mine, two Talmudim actually, two brothers, the Eli and Avi Margulies. For those of us Hemsley guys may know, but their grandfather passed away. And I remember we went to the Levaya. His name was Mr. Manfred Margulies, and he was a Jew who grew up until the age of 11 in Germany. His father had been taken away, followed by Kristallnacht. He fled Germany, and he never saw his parents again. Kristallnacht, we just honored the, I think, 80th anniversary of Kristallnacht. And he never saw his parents again. Basically, his education stopped after the fifth grade. He came to America. He started speaking to different audiences, mostly secular audiences about the Holocaust. And the family had like this treasure of letters and memories, people they had never met that were like so moved by his story. So how did he do it? A person who never received even a junior high school level of education. And he inspired people by the thousands. And the answer is that there's nothing like learning from somebody who didn't learn about the subject in a book, but he just carried it in his heart his entire life. People learn much more effectively when you're learning emotionally than when you're learning intellectually. You know, when there's an emotional connection to the learning, it's much, much easier to learn. You learn much more effectively that way. Right? What do we say? You know, they'll ask, is a guy into learning? What does it mean, is he into learning? It doesn't mean, does he do it? It means, does he emotionally connect to it? Because if you emotionally connect to your learning, then it's an entirely different learning. It has nothing to do with how smart you are. It has nothing, very little to do with your intellectual capabilities. It has everything to do with how emotionally invested you are. And that's like, it's better than the best PhD, you know, from the actual life experience. And the truth is, when you experience something, a person should recognize how much power that comes with, meaning how much opportunity that comes with to be able to now teach other people. Because if we learn better from people who've experienced certain things, then when you experience something, you are now empowered to become a much better teacher about the lessons of that thing. And that's an important hashkafa to have. I was just texting yesterday with my friend Rabbi Eli Portel, and he told me that he asked me to look over a shiur that he's going to be giving, and one of the things he had in his notes was that his second spinal cord injury was much harder for him to handle than his first spinal cord injury. He was a guy, when he was a little boy, had a spinal cord injury and has been in a wheelchair ever since. And then he suffered a second spinal cord injury, which I'm not familiar with. I never asked him the details of that. Why was it so much more difficult, the second one, than the first one? He said, because the first one, there was meaning to it, because now he has the ability to be mechazik other people who've had these kinds of injuries, other people who have similar limitations of mobility and things like that, and how they can get through life. And it could be mechazik people. Look, he could say, look, you can graduate college, you can go to Eretz Yisrael for a couple of years, you can get married, you can have children, and he's able to show them, look, all of this can happen. And it could be mechazik people. But how are you mechazik people with the second injury? what changed enough? And it's like, if that didn't give him the ability to be mechazik other people with it, that's much harder to handle. That's the proper hashkafa, right? A person who takes their own struggles, their own suffering, their own challenges, and says, well, if I experience that, that means that I'm able to teach. Another friend of mine, not so close, but someone I've always liked and admired a great deal, Rabbi Josh Greyjauer, recently lost his wife, very, very tragically, very young age, little pitzalach, little young children at home. And everything he's been doing since then has been to inspire other people or educate other people. At the Shiva, just telling stories, inspiring stories about his wife, Zichrona Livracha, and about and writing articles about how to properly be Menachem Avel, and what kind of words give chizik and what doesn't give chizik, what's helpful, what's not. Using that experience that we don't wish on anybody, and saying, well, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me this experience, then that means I've lived through something that I can now teach through that experience. That's an incredible hashkafa for someone to have when they go through that. We, on the student level, as the learners from these people, realize how much more effective a lesson in Nichum Avelim will be from the likes of Rabbi Greyjauer than it will be from the likes of most others. We realize that the lessons we'll get from Rabbi Portel about how to not be dejected and think that your life is over when something life-changing happens is much more impactful than the lessons. You know, when we hear from a Holocaust survivor, when I hear from my grandfather about what it means to have emunah, what it means to love Hashem and to have gratitude for everything you have in your life, it means a lot more than, you know, the kid whose biggest problem is that his parents took 2 weeks till they said yes to him getting Snapchat. You know, like there are different challenges, different madrigals. And that's why Yaakov chose Yeshivas Shem Ve'Eva. They weren't greater scholars than Avraham Yitzchak. If he was interested in scholarship, he had all the scholarship in the world. But he was headed to the house of Lavan, and he'd been part of enough dinner table conversations in his parents' home to know what that was going to be like. Just they didn't talk so much Lashon Hara, but still, he knew, you know, like at some point, you know, he must have said, hey, Mom, who's my uncle? You know, what's he like? You never talk about your brother, you know? He must have had some inkling of what that was going to be like and to appreciate what he was going to be up against. And he had to build up his defenses to dishonesty and learn to become an Ish Emes, which ultimately worked because he became this Ish Emes. He became this paradigm of Emes. So where is he going to learn about withstanding such pressure? About being able to live in that kind of environment and be this person of great integrity? Avram Yitzchak could give shiurim for hours on the topic. They can give Maram Kamos, you know, and it will be great. But they didn't live through the fire the same way that Shem Ve'Ever did. Shem Ve'Ever, Yeshiva Shem Ve'Ever was built on the ruins of the Dor HaMabul. They saw a world that was destroyed by fraud, by corruption. Lo nechtam gzardinam ela ala gezel. Their yeshiva was founded on the principle of righting all of the wrongs of the Dor HaMabul. So if Yaakov wanted to learn how to combat the challenges, he had to learn from the masters. So Yaakov finishes his 14 years, and he's on fire with integrity. That's the message he was looking for. He's on fire with integrity. He's a paradigm of uprightness, of yashrus. So what does he ask for? Lechem lechol, begad l'lbosh. I want to make an honest living. An umnus nekiyah v'kala. I want something that where I'm not going to be tempted to cut corners in order to feed my family. Where I'll have my needs, because that is what became so important to him. That's what he's built in himself in order to be able to withstand Lavan and the influences of Lavan. So Yaakov, with his mindset, approaches with that mindset, approaches the shepherds in Charan, and what's the first thing he sees? Dishonesty. And if it doesn't bother him, then the last 14 years are a waste. So it's not so much about correcting the behavior of the shepherds, But if Yaakov is going to be Yaakov and he's going to survive all the years that he's going to have to spend in Laban's house, he needs to be bothered by dishonesty. It needs to be something that talks to him, because that's what it was all about. He wasn't stam delaying getting married, he was preparing himself. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky has a famous piece explaining how Yeshiva Shem Ve'Ever was a preparation, but maybe on this level also, he was preparing himself for what it means to live in such a world. And that's a critical message in terms of, a dual message, in terms of where things are best learned, that things are best learned from people who have similar experiences or who have profound experiences that we can learn from, but also that in order for a person to thrive in a world of sheker, in order for a person to maintain a sense of emes in a world of sheker, to maintain a sense of meaning in a world of a lot of hevel, a lot of nothingness, a lot of stupidity, a lot of things that are inflated with pretend meaning, a person has to be mechazek himself. So we don't have 14 years in Yeshiva Shem Ve'Ever. We have our years in Yeshiva, though. We have our time where we're able to work on these midos and work on what it means to be an Ish Emes, work on what it means to value that which is truly meaningful and to ignore that which is silly, that which is nonsense, that which doesn't have any genuine, lasting meaning. And that enables us to experience what Yaakov Avinu experienced, where he's able to report back at the end, Im Lavan Garti, V'Tayig Mitzvah Shamarti. Because at the end of the day, that's where our neshamas go. Our neshamas have to report back. How did you do in my world of Sheker and Hevel? How did you manage to be a beacon of emes and of meaningfulness? And the answer is going to have to be that we managed. But one way to manage is by strengthening ourselves in advance and developing the taste for MS, the distaste for Sheker, the taste for that which has value and the distaste for that which doesn't have value. And that's one of the many, many lessons of the life of Yaakov Avinu.